Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Landon Tengwall. Landon, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well, Jim. I'm doing well. It's a colder week up here in State College, so I didn't get out on the links too much. Anybody that watches frequently knows I try to get out on the golf course as much as possible. But it's looking heat up a little bit here this week. I have a tee time here in a couple hours, so I'm getting after it. I'm getting ready for these events, Jim.
Oh, very nice, very nice. I don't know if I like this, you practicing before you and I get out to play. I haven't been out yet this year, so it's not fair that you're getting all this practice in. You're going to have to give me several strokes.
I'll give you a couple strokes, but I'm coming for it. I'm coming for it all, Jim. Anybody that talk trash on my golf game, I'm constantly improving, man, and there's no stop on that journey, so. Hey, when it's something you can play up until you're 70, 80, you might as well put some time into it, you know? So I'm putting it all the time into my craft.
And yes, you can play as an old guy. I am proof of that. Not necessarily play well, Landon, but play. All right. Hey, I'm excited, Landon. This week, we've got another one of our events going on. We did one of these live shows about a month ago. We've got another one coming up. It's on Wednesday night at Doggy's Pub in downtown State College. That's Wednesday the 27th. We're going to be there from 5:30 to 7:30, and we're going to have as our guest Shar Moret Curtis, legendary field hockey coach, is going to be there. And also, Landon, I'm really excited to talk to Clarissa Crowell. She is the softball coach, and the softball team's really been killing it this year, been playing really well. So I'm excited to get a chance to chat with her. Just as an aside, Tuesday night, the night before our live show, they've got a home game. You and I are going to be there for that. I am dying to see the team play. But anyway, I digress. Wednesday night, if you're in State College, please join us. I'll be there. Landon will be there. Kendall Skalicki will be there. We've got a softball coach, softball player. We got Shar coming in. And Doggies, they have things set up really great for us. They've got a fantastic drink special that night. Blake's Hard Cider Original Drafts will only be $5. They're also going to have a pizza special. So make sure you come out, join me, join Landon, Kendall, as we host this special Keystone Kickoff live show at Doggies, 5:30 to 7:30 on Wednesday. Landon, I hope you're as excited as I am about that event.
Jim, I'm excited. You said food and drinks. I said I'm going to be there. But, yeah, it was a good time last time. We were at Cafe 210 with Coach Keegs and Shar last time. I think it was a really good event, and we had a great turnout, a lot of people supporting Teammates for Life and NIL for other teams. So hope to continue that and continue these great events.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It was a lot of fun last time, going to be a lot of fun again. So please, please come out, join us, and join me, and Landon will be there along with our guests. All right, Landon, let's switch to some actual football talk, or maybe a little off the field college football talk. Last week, you and I didn't get a chance to talk about Nick Saban going to Washington and testifying. Regular listeners to our show, they heard me talk about it last week and what I thought. And I hope I left no doubt where I stood on Saban's testimony in front of Congress. I wanted to get your take as a player about what Nick Saban had to say.
Yeah, I was a little softer on him than you were last week, Jim. But after doing some sitting on some of his comments, it started to not feel as right. And this is someone I've looked up to for a long time. And if you were a college football recruit in high school at any point, you wanted to get that offer from Nick Saban. You wanted to talk with him. And I was able to go down to Alabama my freshman year of high school, and I was offered by him. And it was a, you know, good chat. And he did always stand strong. And, you know, as much as Alabama is a football factory, and I don't know if he meant this when he said this, but he had a strong, felt very strongly about schooling, making sure guys get their degrees. I'm not really sure if his actions match that all the time. But, it's interesting for me for him to come into court and then turn around and essentially just completely bag on everything that's going on with the players. And these coaches, they'll sit up there on their high chairs and talk about, you know, I want these guys to make as much money as possible. But, and then they go on these rants as to why NIL is so wrong and how it's not college football anymore. And it's like, well, don't even say that at first. If you're going to come with that opinion that it's that wrong. And look, I mean, Nick Saban sat down. He said all the things I believed in for 50 years of college athletics is completely gone and they no longer exist. I think that's a really harsh take by him. And then, you know, it's kind of placing a lot of the blame, you know, on the players and on the NCAA. I mean, the NCAA, they had 20 years, they had 30 years. They saw this coming. They are the ones that took college football and made it into this absolute just media machine, merchandise, TV deals. Obviously, guys on social media having hundreds of thousands, millions of followers. I don't know how you don't expect this to happen. So for Nick Saban to be sitting up there and saying, I don't even recognize college football anymore, I think that's a little bit of a harsh take. And let's be honest here. Nick Saban knew what was going on at Alabama for the past 10 or 15, 20 years. They've been paying guys for a long time. So I don't like him sitting up there, Jim, talking about these guys making all this money now isn't right. Look, you started that a long time ago, Saban. You know, from people I've talked to, it is – and I think everybody kind of knows how the SEC rolls down there prior to NIL. They were taking care of their guys. So I think it's a little bit rich for him to sit up there and really criticize these people for bettering their lives and taking these opportunities to make some real life-changing money off NIL.
I very much agree with you, Landon. And the specific issues I have with it is it just feels so hypocritical in two ways. When he seems to be concerned about the players, it's all about the money. Well, this is the guy who jumped jobs to make, he makes over $10 million a year, and he's going to deny the players, the guys who actually go out there and are the ones that we all pay to see, he denies them making money. And oh, by the way, for the players, the vast majority who will never make a penny from professional football, they only have a small window to make money. If it doesn't happen in college for them, it never will. They will never make money at football. So to deny them that ability. And the other thing that he said that really stuck in my craw was he talked about NIL ruining competitive balance. Wait a minute. Alabama, for the last decade and a half, had every advantage in the world. They had the best facilities, the highest paid coaching staff. All of the advantages they had, he was okay with that. I don't recall 10 years ago Nick Saban saying, oh, well, wait a minute, administration. Don't give me more money for my coaching staff because that'll be unfair to other teams. We'll have a competitive advantage. Do you recall him saying that, Landon?
I don't, Jim. I don't. I think you're dead. I think he was completely dead wrong there. And we've talked about this prior on the podcast that NIL is actually giving these other teams a fighting chance against Alabama, against Georgia, Ohio State. Look at TCU, Texas, Washington. Without NIL, I don't think any of those teams make it to the college football playoffs. I don't think Washington is able to get Michael Penix without NIL. So I think Saban is very off the mark here. And like I said, and you said this too, it's very hypocritical, the fact that he's been making $10 million for the past, you know, 10, 15 years. And not to mention, he says things, but I feel like his actions don't match them as much. I mean, this is the guy that told everybody at Miami, I'm not going anywhere, when he was with the Dolphins, turns around, jumps ship, goes back to college. It's very convenient for these coaches that they can say one thing and then do another. And they're not judged, but these guys, you know, hopping in the portal and looking for better opportunities for themselves are very quickly demonized in the face of the media. And then, you know, Saban went on to talk a story about his wife where they had recruits over to their house and the parents were there as well. And his wife, Miss Tammy, came over to him and said, you know, Nick, this isn't right anymore. These parents, they only care about money. And instead of asking, how are you going to make my child a better player, a better man? You know, how are you going to advance his education? They're only asking, how much money are you going to offer us? What's the money you're bringing to the table? And, you know, I think Alabama was one of the programs that cultivated that. They were the ones pumping out money from the beginning in NIL. So I just don't think it's fair for Nick Saban to retire and now he can just take this ultra hard stance on NIL and how wrong it is and we need to completely get rid of it. Well, you didn't hate it too much when you were using it to your advantage either. And he was poaching a couple players with money too. Jahmyr Gibbs they got from the portal and obviously gave him some nice chunk of change. So I just think overall it's very hypocritical and it's funny timing for him to retire and then make his way to court in Washington and just kind of ram into the NCAA and NIL and everything that's going on.
I obviously agree. And I do think that there are issues with the game. And I'm not sure it's the – in fact, I'm not even going to say not sure. I feel strongly that it's not an issue with the players making money. Not at all. I mean, I don't stop watching NFL football because players are making millions of dollars. I that doesn't bother me. I think the bigger issue that fans should have, because the money doesn't change the game itself on the field, but the transfer portal does, that complete and total free agency. And I know I've said this before, I'm doing it. I think they need to somehow tie money to loyalty or a contract to stay at the school. But that would involve the schools paying the players. But Landon, there's just so much money coming to the schools. If you're a Big Ten school, you're making about $70 million on the regular season television contract. You are now going to be making over $20 million as an individual school from the playoff TV contract. I would think even if you just say 10% of the TV money goes to the players, every player would get over $100,000. 10% doesn't seem to be a big price to pay for the guys who are actually the game itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, Jim, but I think that's the biggest thing that these universities and the NCAA is actually trying to keep from the players is that media sharing the media rights money. I that's where the majority of the money comes from, and I just don't think they want to give it up. So they're gonna fight as long as possible to keep that precious media money. But you didn't even talk about merchandise, ticket sales. You start talking. We talked about giving, you know, 80. So we got what, 85 scholarships. You talk about giving each player 100,000, give or take. If it's a better player, give them a little bit more. That's not that much in the grand scheme of things. It's not that hard for the universities.
It really isn't. Landon, let's pick this up when we come back. We're out of time in quarter one. We'll pick it up in quarter number two.
Hi, I'm Andrew Blake, CEO of Blake's Hard Cider Company, located on our fourth generation family farm here in Armada, Michigan. At Blake's, we value quality, consistency, and flavor above all else, and work hard every day to deliver our products to a store near you. Here at Blake's, we're all about the apple. The apples are grown, picked, pressed, and fermented right here. We aim to excite your taste buds and aspire to explore the flavors of the farm in every can. Enjoy a Blake's today with friends and family. Cheers.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He is Landon Tengwall. I am Jim Galante. We are talking about college football. Before we get started with this segment, Landon, just a reminder, if you want to upgrade your tailgating experience, it's time for Revel XP. It's almost time for the annual spring game. If you're ready to tailgate close to the stadium with the tents, tables, chairs, even the ice, they are ready and waiting for you. Then you got to check out RevelXP.com. They could even help you out with your catering. And by the way, Keystone Sports, we tailgate at RevelXP. We'll be there for the spring game. Maybe we'll see you there too. All you got to do, check out RevelXP.com. That's RevelXP.com. And you too could experience turnkey tailgating. All right, Landon, when we finished up quarter number one, I was putting out that same idea I always do. Why can't the teams, with those huge TV contracts, pay a portion of it to the players. Now, you mentioned that the TV revenue is only a piece of the puzzle. There's ticket revenue, parking revenue, merchandise, all of these other things are part of the revenue. So when I propose, hey, how about take 10% of the television revenue and give to the players? That's really even much less than 10% of the whole ball of wax, the whole amount of money, right?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And then you look, especially with Penn State, and obviously not having the names on the back of the jerseys, but you look, how many 15 jerseys are there in that Penn State stadium that they have sold essentially in Drew Aller's likeness without his name on the back? And, you know, he's not really seeing a chunk of that. It's that type of stuff. It's really interesting. And I think we're going to continue to see the NCAA try to gatekeep as much money as possible. These universities as well, they don't want to give it up. I think that's why originally we saw them say, hey, these NIL collectives cannot be in-house. They're not allowed to. It needs to be, a second party because of the fact that they don't want that funding to be able to just go into the players. Because we talked about it. If you bring these NIL collectives in-house, you're able to access a lot more funding. It's a lot easier to do a lot of these deals with these players. So I think that's where we're headed. We've seen a couple teams take the collectives in-house, but I feel strong that these universities, the NCAA, doesn't want that to happen. But I think that needs to happen with what we've seen these NIL collectives just completely tank different colleges. I mean, Tennessee got away with it because they were able to whoop up on the NCAA in court, which the NCAA has had a bad time in court over the past couple years. But they came after Tennessee because their collectives were not following the rules at all. And we've seen a lot of places where these collectives are essentially people trying to hop in and make a quick buck off these athletes that are, you know, trying to find their way around this NIL space. And it's they know it's confusing and they know it's difficult. So I think we've seen a lot of these collectives take advantage of many players. But I'm hoping to see that come to an end soon. Like I said, bringing everything in-house within the athletic departments and allowing them then to manage the money. And I think that will in turn regulate a lot of the money that these players are getting a lot easier. But then obviously you start to get into unionization and that type of stuff. Starts to get real messy, Jim, which is why I think this is going to take a long time to sort out, just because there's so many variables and so many little details that need to be sorted out, and it's going to be a doozy for the NCAA. I think this is going to continue to be a big headache for them for years to come until they really find a great solution.
I'm just not sure the NCAA is well positioned to do anything, because as you mentioned, the Tennessee situation was, okay, they're breaking the rules. The NCAA tries to enforce it, and there you go. And I get frustrated a lot when individuals, media people, they'll get on their high horse and say, oh, I don't like what's happening there. Why doesn't the NCAA do anything about it? Well, when they try, they get their hands slapped, even if it is against the rules. That's why I think it's going to take somebody else, and specifically the Southeast Conference and Big Ten, are the driving force in college football right now. I think it takes their commissioners to get together and do something. But one of the things I did want to ask you about from a player's perspective, now we've talked about this already, an individual player by the name of Caden Proctor. He was a five-star recruit out of Iowa, originally committed to Iowa, then reneged on that commitment, signed with Alabama, spent a year there, was a starter there as a true freshman at left tackle, a talented player. He then, after Nick Saban leaves, decides to commit back to Iowa, starts collecting NIL money, goes to Iowa. Until spring break, he ends up traveling with his old buddies from Alabama and now decides he wants to go to Alabama, having never played for Iowa, but collecting some money from the NIL. Now, there are some details. Oh, the NIL's argued nothing came directly from, you know, the NIL. There were people who volunteered money. It didn't come from the collective, I mean. But the fact is, he went to Iowa, got some money, abandoned them, went back to Alabama, landed. This is where the players end up getting criticized when you see things like that happening. I wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the criticism here for Caden Proctor is pretty legit. I think jumping ship back and forth is definitely wrong, and it kind of makes you feel like, hey, is this guy really want to be my teammate? Does he really want to be here, and can I rely on him to want to win this game, or is he trying to make a couple extra bucks? And I'm sure that was, you know, a big pressure on him that he said, talking to his former teammates at Alabama, and they're saying, hey, dude, this, you know, ain't much changed over here. We still have a great coach. It's not Saban, but we're still Alabama. We need you back here. We need our best offensive tackle back with us. And I don't know, maybe that NIL wasn't appeasing him too much at Iowa, but it seems like he got a nice little chunk of change and then brought his way back down to Alabama. But it's one of those situations, is can you hate on him that much if he's just taking advantage of everything that's been put in front of him? Look, I mean, I think this is the NCAA enabling it. And like I said, I don't think what he's done is right. And I think he's going to have a little bit of a stain on his name for a little bit. Not for long, because we know how talented this guy is. I mean, he's going to be an NFL player, no doubt, if you're starting, you know, freshman year at left tackle at Alabama. But I think this is the type of stuff that puts a bad taste in the fans' mouth and say, wait a minute, this just is not right. This is not what college football is. And I think these type of stories make big headlines, and it allows these NIL haters to glob onto these stories and make them bigger headlines than they really need to be. I this isn't happening everywhere where a player is just jumping from school back to his same school. But it just kind of continues to put a dampening on NIL and what it stands for, and gives more reason to want to overhaul it. So, I think he's taking advantage of all the rules that are in front of him, and he has the ability to do that. But I think we're seeing firsthand how dangerous the NIL and transfer portal really is this day and age in college football.
And that's where I do believe the transfer portal is the bigger issue. Now, the straightforward answer is, oh, why doesn't the NCAA do something about it? They can't. You know, if that goes to court and you say, hey, I'm a college student who played football here, now I choose to play at Iowa, well, I changed my mind again, going back to Alabama. There should be nothing wrong with that. And if the Iowa people choose to, you know, give me money, who am I to say no to it? But it's the long lasting, the after effect to it. If you're an Iowa fan, or if you're the specific people that they talked about who were, you know, major donors or business people in Iowa who came up with the money for the player, don't you feel burned? And hey, the next time there's an opportunity for a good player to come to Iowa, that same person might just say, you know what? I tried this. I got burned by it. I'm not going to go down that path again. And that was because individual players created that problem.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I, once again, NCAA is going to have to do something. And I've seen talks about, hey, is this, the NCAA keeps getting burned in court. Is there any chance we start to see the SEC, Big Ten kind of secede from the NCAA and say, hey, we're going to do our own thing. We don't really need you. You're not really a governing body anymore, because you just keep getting told, hey, you can't enforce this law, you can't enforce this rule. So, I mean, really, what is the NCAA even doing anymore? They just keep getting whooped up on in court by all these teams and all these different state attorneys. You know, it's going to be interesting to see where this continues to go. But I think we're going to continue to see this get a little bit worse in terms of transfer portal, NIL, before it gets better. I think we're going to see more scenarios and cases like this. But you make a great point. If someone's at their job and they go to a different job, that the old job says, hey, you know, we miss you. We want to offer you an even better package than you had here, and a better package than you're getting over there. And they say, you know what? Hey, I've been here for 2 months, but I'm coming back. There's nothing against that out in real life. So it's hard to say, hey, you can't do that in football. But just from a standpoint of what we know and what's been against the rules in the past, it just feels so wrong in college football. But I don't think necessarily from an ethical standpoint, is it that wrong? I don't think so.
Well, the thing you bring up in private industry, people being able to jump jobs, and they can. But there's also such a thing in the working world as having a contract, and also a non-compete clause in that contract. But if I'm going to sign a contract with an employer, there are certain things that it goes both ways. Compensation comes with that. If I'm going to say, look, I promise not to compete with anyone else, I'm signing a 5-year contract with this company. Well, it's a 5-year commitment by me and also a 5-year commitment by the employer. I'm circling around there, Landon, coming back to the same place. And I've yet to have somebody say to me, really, why can't we have contracts for the players? And it's, we will pay you, but it's a 3-year contract or 2-year contract or whatever it is, which means I'm committing to you, but you're also committing to me. I've yet to have someone explain to me why that can't be done, Landon.
Jim, we got to get you out there in front of the NCAA commissioner. We got to get you in court down there with Nick Saban in Washington. Because you know, it's a good point, though. I mean, we do need to get back to not being able to just jump ship whenever you feel like it. I'm a fan of being able to transfer one time during your undergrad. And then once you are a graduate student of that university that you're at, you have one more opportunity to transfer to another team. But I think, and I don't know how the NCAA would go about this, but like you said, it's locking guys into contracts is probably the easiest way. There's no ability now to just say, hey, you're not allowed to do this. You can't transfer, because clearly they're going to get beaten in court.
Exactly. An agreement has to go both ways, an advantage to both. Landon, that is it for quarter two. How about we talk some actual football when we get back for quarter three?
Hi, I'm Andrew Blake, CEO of Blake's Hard Cider Company, located on our 4th-generation family farm here in Armada, Michigan. At Blake's, we value quality, consistency, and flavor above all else, and work hard every day to deliver our products to a store near you. Here at Blake's, we are all about the apple. The apples are grown, picked, pressed, and fermented right here. We aim to excite your taste buds and aspire to explore the flavors of the farm in every can. Enjoy a Blake's today with friends and family. Cheers.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. He's Landon. I'm Jim. We are talking college football in general. And I promise this segment we are going to get into Penn State football. But first, just a reminder, we are doing a special edition, a live edition of the Keystone Kickoff Show on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, March 27th, from Doggy's Pub at Downtown State College. I'll be there along with Landon, Kendall Skalicki. We'll be hosting Charmarette Curtis, Clarissa Crowell, the softball coach. We'll even have a player or two from the softball team. We're going to have some great drink specials, especially Blake's Hard Cider, original draft. They'll only be $5. We're also going to have some food specials there. If you haven't been to Doggies in a while, fun place, great place. I'm really looking forward to it. And also, if you're not going to get to State College, our plan is we're going to live stream the event from our YouTube channel, Keystone Sports. Check that out. We'll get you out some links to that so you can have that. But 5:30 to 7:30, Wednesday, March 27th, we look forward to seeing you there. Last one we did was a lot of fun. I'm sure this one will be too. All right, Landon, as promised, I said we were going to talk some actual football, Penn State football specifically. I'm really anxious to kind of get your take. We're right in the middle of spring practice, and it's two new coordinators. And James Franklin always says they're the head coach of the offense, the head coach of the defense. Andy Kotelnicki, Tom Allen. My question to you as a player is, first of all, how do you adapt to a new coordinator or even a new position coach? It's got to be a major change for the players.
Yeah, Jim, I think the first thing starts out with just building that initial relationship, coming into his office, just saying what's up, kind of just understanding how he coaches. And I've spoken to this prior. It's very different between coaches on how they handle their relationships with players. So you have to get a feel for that first. You know, is this a guy that's a big yeller? Is he going to just take you under his wing and talk to you when you mess up? How does he go about that? And then just kind of getting used to his scheme. It's going to be different. I will say from, you know, Mike Yurcich, from Kirk Sriracha, I don't think it was that different. It was really, for the most part, the same playbook. I don't think very much changed. I wasn't here for Sriracha in 2020. but it was very similar from seeing the playbooks. I think we're going to see, just talking about Andy Kotelnicki here, I think we're going to see a much different offense. I think we're going to see a lot more of explosive offense. And I know we hear that every time we get a new offensive coordinator, and everybody wants to go back to the Joe Moorhead days when Trace McSorley was throwing bombs out there. But I really do believe, I think he's going to get us back to that. The closest thing we've seen since Joe Moorhead, kind of studying his offense a little bit at Kansas. It was very explosive. Now, granted, playing in the Big 12 over there and some of those lesser teams with DBs, and their defense does not focus on playing too much defense, it seems, when you look at those scores at the end of Saturdays. But he likes to, and this is one thing we talked about, Jim, he likes to get outside a lot. He likes those pin pulls where you get those guards, those centers in space, let those big guys block for Katron, for Nick, you know, outside zone. Definitely loves a lot of counter with that gap scheme, pulling the guard and the tackle and creating a lot of movement up front, and then allowing his running backs to get busy. So I'm excited to see what he can do. And then also, we've seen some clips of Drew Aller at practice. Lot of read option stuff, Jim. And I know that gets you excited, because Jim, old salty Jim over here, always gets a little angry when he says, why is there not an option for this quarterback to pull it on every play? Well, it kind of looks like they're putting a lot of time and effort into Drew Aller, understanding read option, a lot of pitches we saw from practice out on Twitter, him pulling it and then pitching it to another running back. So I think we're going to see what Coach Franklin calls Lamar Alar. That's when Drew Aller gets he gets moving with his feet. That's what Coach Franklin calls him when he gets running. So I think we're going to see Drew Aller use his feet, use his body a little bit more. I know he's focusing on his speed and getting a little bit faster. So I'm hoping to see a little bit more Josh Allen out of him, instead of being a little bit more of a statue back in the pocket.
Well, the thing to me with that, just to clarify my position, it felt like they were running a read option, which is either give it to the running back or the quarterback keeps it. And that's, you have to make the defense decide which one, and the quarterback makes the decision. Are they focused on the running back or on me? And that determines whether you give it or not. Well, if the quarterback never keeps it, it's pretty obvious where the play is going. There is no option. I literally can recall one play where Drew Aller kept it on that play. One all season. So I just want him to be a threat. So when I hear people say, well, of course you'd rather have Nick Singleton run the ball than Drew Aller. Yes. Yes, I would too. If you never want Aller to run the ball, though, don't run that option play. Don't run it if he's never going to run it. Let him at least be a threat to run it. All right, salty Jim rant.
I appreciate the clarification, Jim. I was actually just recently these past couple of days watching some Kansas tape from this past season, and he had some athletic quarterbacks, and obviously we've heard of him running the two quarterback system, which is going to be very fun. I think we need to get Bo Prabula involved. But one of my favorite things he does off the read option, and I'm going to put out a Kansas offensive breakdown here in the near future. But they're doing that read option with the running back. So they're either going to hand it off to that running back that's right to the right of, you know, Drew, which will be Nick, Katron, whoever it may be. But then they're bringing a wide receiver / running back kind of on an orbit motion behind Drew. So what that does is if Drew decides to pull it, now he's pulling and he can run, but now he also has that pitch option of the guy that orbits around him and then continues to widen out towards the sideline. He's keeping that cornerback, that safety, he's making them make a decision. So now I think one thing that Andy Kotelnicki does a good job is he puts stress on a defense. That was one of my biggest takeaways from watching that Kansas offense that I don't think we did well enough, was stress out the defense and make them make decisions. And then we kind of take what they give us. So I'm really excited to put out a breakdown of his offense, but I think we're just going to see a lot more explosiveness from this Penn State offense. And look, we have the guys to do it. Tyler Warren, Katron Allen, Nick Singleton, tight end room that is very deep. Now, there obviously is a little bit of a question mark at wide receiver. What are we going to get from Julian Fleming? From my understanding is he's down about 10, 15 pounds. He looks really good. I think anybody that's on Twitter saw the video of him juking a defensive back out. It was a pretty clean move that he had. So he's looking agile. He's looking good. But also, Keandre Lambert-Smith coming back. for another year. I think a lot of people after that West Virginia game were saying, oh, this is going to be his year, a big year for him after Parker Washington and Mitchell Tinsley left and Jahan Dotson the year before that. But didn't really step up in the way that everybody kind of expected it. So I know we have the talent and the guys that are capable, but it's going to be on these coaches. It's going to be on Andy Kotoniki to get these guys involved and create some explosive plays, Jim.
Well, the point on Keandre Lambert-Smith, I think what will make him better is last year at times it felt like he was alone at wide receiver. And now with Julian Fleming there and hopefully a healthy Trey Wallace, you know, I hope I'm not the last guy who's still on the Trey Wallace train. I think he could be very big time if he's out on the field, if he's healthy, Landon.
Yeah, Jim, I totally agree. I think a lot of people forget about him, and when playing is, an elite wide receiver, someone that can go up, get jump balls. I've seen this guy do a 360 dunk out there on the basketball courts. He has the hops, the bunnies, as the kids say, to get up there, and then he can create separation too. I think that's something that we have really been lacking at Penn State with our wide receiver since Jahan and Parker have left, is wide receivers that can help out their quarterbacks and make it an easier throw where Drew isn't having to fit it in to some type of small window. And look, I watching a lot of tape recently, I actually just recently got access. Shout out to our guys over on For the Bloggy, helping me out, getting me a bunch of college football tape. But I've been watching some of these games from this past year. And my biggest takeaway is, and I'd like to do a big segment on this, Drew Aller was not being helped out at all from his wide receivers. I mean, many times guys in the same exact area, and if you know anything about wide receiver play, if you have two receivers essentially right next to each other, that someone is running the wrong route. And there seemed to be a lot of confusion and just him not getting help from his offensive coordinator and from his wide receivers. So I'm excited to see Drew Aller get some help. And I think if anybody says that, you know, jury's closed on him and that he's not the guy, I would tell you are absolutely wrong. And I'm really excited to see what he does in this new offense.
We are going to have to do something more on the wide receivers, Landon. I like that idea. Last question. I like doing this to our guests, and there's no one who can answer this better than a guy who's been there. I say, I'm making you the offensive coordinator, okay? Instead of Andy Kotoniki getting the job, it was Landon Tengwall getting the job. Tell me what you're going to do with that position, Landon.
Yeah, I think, first off, Jim, like I said, figuring out that wide receiver room. You need to figure out who are going to be your three guys, and you need to work hard with them. Drew Aller needs to be out there every day in the summertime saying, hey, we're going to go out there and get some extra throws in, some extra routes, making sure those guys know exactly what they need to do and really developing that rapport with Drew Aller and being able to help him out. I think this run game is going to continue to chug along as it has these past couple years. It seems like every year we've just watched this run game improve. I think, you know, looking back to 2020, if we had 150 yards on the ground in a game, I mean, it was almost like it was a miracle. I think we played Michigan in 2020. Keyvon Lee had a big game. And that was otherworldly for us here at Penn State. And I think since Saquon, since Miles and those guys were here, we didn't really have a running attack that was truly threatening. And I think through the process that Phil Troutwein has put this offensive line through, I am really excited to see what these guys can do up front. Because another thing, talking about helping Drew out, there's no easier way to help your quarterback out than having a run game, Jim. I mean, that takes a ton of pressure off of the quarterback knowing, hey, I can give Nick or Katron this ball. They're going to get me 5 or 6 yards because this offensive line is up front manhandling guys. And that's really going to help my confidence out as a quarterback, knowing, hey, this isn't all on my back. As you look back to, you know, Michigan last year, Katron Allen popped off one big run, but for the most part, it felt like the whole weight of the game was on Drew Aller's shoulders. And that's not easy, putting on a young, essentially a freshman quarterback, putting the whole weight of the game of deciding if you can go to the Big Ten championship or not on your quarterback and not helping him out. As I spoke to earlier, definitely some wide receivers not understanding what their routes were in that game, specifically that Michigan game. It was a rough one, but I do not think it was all on him. Like I said, especially after taking a look at that film for a second and third time, I'm excited to see how to help him out, how this, and like I said, I think Andy Kotoniki's going to do it. I don't know. I wouldn't do as good of a job, Jim, but I think he's going to find a way to get these guys in space, do stuff like Nick Singleton on the edge we saw in that Michigan State game, just continue to help his quarterback out.
You know what? I don't doubt you would be able to handle it, Landon. All right, that is it for quarter number three. Stick around. We got more to go in quarter number four.
Hi, I'm Andrew Blake, CEO of Blake's Hard Cider Company, located on our fourth generation family farm here in Armada, Michigan. At Blake's, we value quality, consistency, and flavor above all else, and work hard every day to deliver our products to a store near you. Here at Blake's, we are all about the apple. The apples are grown, picked, pressed, and fermented right here. We aim to excite your taste buds and aspire to explore the flavors of the farm in every can. Enjoy a Blake's today with friends and family. Cheers.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Landon Tangwalt. This is quarter number four of our show. And if you are ready to upgrade your tailgating experience, it is time for Revel XP. You know what? We're heading towards the spring game. And if you're ready to tailgate close to the stadium with the tent, tables, chairs, and everything all there and ready for you when you show up, you got to check out RevelXP.com. They could even help you out with your catering. By the way, we at Keystone Sports, that's where we tailgate. So if you go there for the spring game, good chance you could see us. Come on over and say hi to me and Landon. So check out Revel XP, RevelXP.com, and you too can experience turnkey tailgating. Landon, I hope I didn't cause a problem there when I said to come over. And you don't mind if folks come over and say hello to you, do you?
Jim, it's going to be a party. Everybody's welcome, and we're excited. It's going to be a good time with Revel XP. They do it right, man, over there by the soccer fields, all those white tents. I would always see them, actually. I remember going into the stadium and coming out. Always said, hey, that looks like a good time over there. It looks like a party. So I'm excited to finally be a part of it. And this season, this blue and white tailgate will actually be my first true tailgating experience, Jim, of my life. Normally I'm headed into the stadium instead of into the tailgating lot, but I'm excited, man. I can't wait to get into it and have some food, have some drinks, and have some good conversations with some great people.
You know, no doubt, Landon, I'm sure it's exciting to go into the stadium and play. However, as someone who's been to a few tailgates, we have some fun also, my friend.
I believe it, Jim. I know how you get down. So we're going to have a good time. If anybody's looking for a good time, all you got to do is find Jim Galante, and he'll show you a good time, man.
We will be ready. All right, Landon. Let's turn back to Penn State football. As much as I like to talk about tailgating, you know that. Going forward, there's something I've been meaning to talk to you about, and I think it's a big issue that's been underplayed. Now, we see after the season – all of the activity in the transfer portal. I mean, teams lose double-digit players. They have double-digit players coming in. So many. At Penn State, that's really not been the case. It's only been a handful of guys hitting the portal, just a handful of players being brought in. It feels like James Franklin is very particular about what players he brings in. But here's the math. You are allowed 85 scholarships. Penn State currently, I believe the number is something like 97 players on scholarship. It has to be down to 85 in August. I guess my question, how does this work? We know we're always told there's those conversations, those tough conversations that will happen, say, after spring practice. Could you walk me through those tough conversations? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, I think first off, it's definitely not easy. And I think you have some people on the roster right now that you expect to leave after spring ball, because there are some guys that are going to say, hey, I don't want to waste a spring ball. Because if you were to enter the transfer portal, say this past January, you're not able to play spring ball anywhere, whether you're going somewhere else, whether you're staying where you're at, you don't have that ability to play. So in a lot of guys' eyes, it's, hey, it's somewhat selfish, and a lot of coaches don't like it because it's, you know, hey, I'm giving this guy reps and he's going to end up leaving and I don't even know about it. But that's what a lot of players do, because they still want those spring ball reps and they're not able to get them anywhere else. But one thing that NIL, you know, you're talking about being 10, 13 over the scholarship limit. And this isn't something that that these universities can just stiff arm the NCAA and say, hey, we're doing this. I think this is an NCAA rule that is here to stay. You have to be at 85, and that is going to be the law. I don't think that the courts are going to be able to pull one over on the NCAA here. But one thing that NIL allows you to do is essentially have some of these fans fund a scholarship for a player. So you have those 85 scholarships that are given by the university. If you have some dedicated fans, and some, especially some fans that really want to say, hey, I am really a part of this team and I'm helping this team out, well, you essentially have the ability to say, hey, you can pay for a whole entire scholarship. You know, so they might not technically be on scholarship. They might be technical walk-ons as far as NCAA is concerned. But if you're giving them money, whatever it may be, whatever however much it is that year, say, you know, scholarship's $50,000, and then put the stipend on top of that, and you end, you know, right around $100,000, maybe, you know, maybe a little bit less than that. I think that's kind of an interesting intricacy that the NIL allows you to do, is kind of have more people on scholarship. Now, granted, I don't think you're doing that with the top players. There's no top players that are going to come in and be happy or be okay with not being on scholarship and having to pay that money out of pocket, even though they're receiving that money. But if it's kind of those fringe guys that you say, hey, they deserve a scholarship here, we just don't have the numbers to be able to bring him on. You can go to a donor and say, hey, we really need $85,000. We want this guy on scholarship, and you are fully funding this guy's scholarship. You are really helping our team out. There's some people that get some fulfillment, some enjoyment out of really helping teams out. So I think that's, you see that it's happening at other places from my understanding, but it's something that Penn State can take advantage of if they have the funds to be able to essentially fund extra scholarships. Now, I don't know if you have the funds to be able to sponsor 13 to 15 extra scholarships, Jim. So I think there are going to have to be some of those tough conversations where it's essentially what we see on Hard Knocks, where you bring a guy in and the GM, in this case, Coach Franklin, says, hey, we don't have the numbers. We really like you, but we're not able to retain you. So I think we will see some of that, but I think you'll see a couple guys Penn State be over the limit of 85, but those scholarships technically being taken care of by some donors.
It's an interesting thought, and I haven't read too much about that happening, you know, elsewhere, and especially with the case where there are 97 guys on scholarship. So if all of a sudden we say, okay, you're no longer on scholarship, but you're going to get the money elsewhere, I haven't heard that being made public anywhere, where the guy is, you know, no longer one of those 85 scholarships. He was, but now he no longer is. You know, I guess I could see that more where a guy is a walk-on and probably has earned a scholarship because he came to the university as a walk-on. Well, you know, you take care of him on the side through the collective. It's hard for me to imagine a player who's already on scholarship. But anyway, you still have, as you mentioned, some of those tough conversations. Now, I think some of those tough conversations are going to go on in the wide receiver room. You only have two or possibly three on the field at a time, and there are 15 wide receivers on scholarship. I can't imagine all of them will come back. You know, I don't think it's fair to pick out a name and say, oh, I don't think he'll be back. But when a guy ends up, you know, he's not part of the 2-deep, 3-deep, 4-deep, you know, he's fifth in the pecking order. That's pretty rough. I would think the conversation revolves around, look, here's the situation. You're not going to make it onto the field in the foreseeable future, if ever, because there are even younger players ahead of you now. Is that how the conversation works?
It definitely can shape out that way, Jim. And I think these players want to be treated essentially like NFL players. They want to make these big bucks, and we want to be paid real money. And we've talked about all these real world scenarios as far as, you know, corporate world and jumping from job to job. Well, we want to be treated that way. We also have to receive it on that same engine, where our employer hey, if you're not cutting it, if you're not doing what is asked of you, you can get booted. That's how it works in the corporate world, in the real world. And I think there was a little bit of that protection being an NCAA scholarship athlete, where it was essentially a rule, unless you do something to get kicked off, you don't get a scholarship just taken for poor performance. But that's one thing that the NIL and transfer portal has kind of brought on is, hey, we want to be treated like professional athletes. Well, okay, you're not doing your job. You can get booted real quick and go find somewhere else to be. So I do think that, you know, Coach Franklin stresses, you know, family, and he wants to make sure that these players are taken care of. But you get to a certain point where this is a business and you have to make business decisions. And when you're essentially over the cap, you know, 85 players, if you have a wide receiver, like you said, 12, 13 guys on scholarship, and you don't even know which one of these three or four is even going to help you out, let alone those guys that are all the way at the bottom, you got to start getting rid of a couple of those guys. And especially you're going to have people hit that transfer portal after spring ball. Like I said, there's a lot of people, not only at Penn State, but around college football, that are going to enter that transfer portal after spring ball. And so I think there's going to be a couple wide receivers that might come open that Penn State could have some interest in. But if you don't cut that wide receiver room down a little bit as far as scholarships, you can't bring anybody else in. You need to clean house a little bit and allow Andy Kotelnicki, Coach Franklin, all those guys to make a decision and be able to bring in a couple fresh faces that, you know, obviously we had a couple guys that didn't work out. Dante Cephas, McLean's still on the roster, but hasn't seemed to work out too well to this point. But you got to give your team that opportunity and that ability to go out and get some new talent for Drew Aller here. And I think the first way to do that is to narrow down that wide receiver room a little bit and allow them to just have some spaces open, because we've seen what this wide receiver room has done in the past. And like I said, since the departure of Jahan Dotson, Parker Washington, Mitchell Tinsley, it has really been lacking. And we know that Drew Aller needs some help, and you have to get him help. You have to give your star quarterback help if you truly want him to succeed in the Big Ten, especially playing USC, playing Washington, these air raid offenses. And we saw it. We played Ole Miss. That was really fun. Well, it wasn't fun as a Penn State fan, but if I was an Ole Miss fan, Jim, I would have been having a blast watching that type of air raid, explosive offense, just sling it around. And I think Drew Aller has that ability. We have the O-line. We have the running backs. We have the tight ends, that's for sure. Ty Howe has those guys just pumping out of that room. Tyler Warren coming back, maybe the best tight end in all of college football. The big question mark is just at that wide receiver position, Jim. And like I said, we need the ability to bring in some guys as well outside of Julian Fleming, Keandre Lambert-Smith, and Trey Wallace. Bring in a couple other guys to compete with those three and really push each other to be the best wide receiver room that they can get.
You know, Landon, you make a good point about that and the opportunity to bring in some more players. But it's also, you don't want to hurt any player. You don't want to have to process players, if you will. But the fact is, you've got a whole team to worry about. You've got a coaching staff to worry about who won't be here for long if the team doesn't perform. So you got to take care of everybody. Landon, that's going to have to be it for our show. Thank you, Landon. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hi, I'm Andrew Blake, CEO of Blake's Hard Cider Company, located on our fourth generation family farm here in Armada, Michigan. At Blake's, we value quality, consistency, and flavor above all else, and work hard every day to deliver our products to a store near you. Here at Blake's, we are all about the apple. The apples are grown, picked, pressed, and fermented right here. We aim to excite your taste buds and aspire to explore the flavors of the farm in every can. Enjoy a Blake's today with friends and family. Cheers.